Now on the BBC World Service, Voices from the Ghetto. Monica Whitlock explores a unique body of testimony detailing the death and life of the Warsaw Ghetto.
This high brick wall I'm standing by in Warsaw is one of the last signs of a vanished city that once held 500,000 people. The brief, bitter life of the Jewish ghetto can still speak to us, though, through an archive of more than 35,000 documents buried under the city 70 years ago. This is the story of how the archive was collected, hidden and recovered. The voices you hear come from its pages.
Here, Warsaw, my Warsaw, for me, you are dead.
22nd July, Wednesday. Drizzle. 6,250 people deported. 23rd July, Thursday. Cool. Rain on and off all day. 7,200 people deported.
7, May the treasure fall into good hands. May it last into better times. May it alarm and alert the world to what happened and what was played out in the 20th century. We may die now in peace. We have fulfilled our mission. May history be our witness. David Graber, age 19.
Red bricks stuck with crumbly mortar, Schenner Street. On the far side, I can see the glassy blue tower of the Intercontinental Hotel. There are neat rows of marigolds planted, children playing in the courtyard. It's hard to imagine that in the middle of the 20th century, the middle of modern Europe, this peaceful spot was the wall of a prison city. The Warsaw Ghetto held 500,000 Jewish souls, forced here when Hitler crushed Poland into the Greater Reich. All over Europe, Jewish people were trapped into ghettos. This was the biggest. Run your hands along this wall and you can just about trace how it would have divided neighbour from neighbour, slicing through buildings, streets and lives. Behind here, everyone from the film stars of Warsaw to the wretched farmers forced from their villages and shtetls, all crammed together behind bricks and barbed wire. For 884 days, the people behind this wall strove to live longer than the war, strove to keep themselves human in a crazy, terrifying world.
Through the jungle of stone walls, our steps called out to each other, like melancholy birds, yet together with dust and wind. I will bring home in the folds of my dress your scent, which unknowingly hit my heart between sweat and benzene, perfumes and silk, like the idea of spring and winter.
How do people who want to know, want to identify, explore a place and a time that no longer exists? Warsaw has been reconstructed as a 21st century city, with the exception of a few bricks here and there and some odd objects in a museum. What's left? What is left are the words, the stories.
Stanislav Ozovsky. We do not plan weeks, months, and years. We wait for the moment that will come, we know not when. We survive. We survive outside time.
I was given Little Dorrit for my 10th birthday. I read it and I felt that Little Dorrit and me were sisters. She lived in the Marshalsea prison with her father, but she was free to go out. I wasn't.
I began to collect material on current events in October 1939. Whatever I heard in the course of the day, I wrote down in the evening and added my observations. In time, these daily records made up a good-sized book of some hundreds of closely written pages. A mirror of that time, a photograph.
Emmanuel Ringelblum, a historian and schoolteacher, aged 39 and living in Warsaw with his wife Yehudit and 9-year-old son Uri. His photograph shows a smiling fellow, dark-haired, in a white open-neck shirt. But he wasn't an armchair scholar. Ringelblum wasn't a watcher. As refugees fled the terrible, lightning-quick advance of Hitler's armies through Middle Europe, Ringelblum rushed to offer on-the-ground help. He wrote down what he saw, a small idea that grew.
The records of the Ringelblum archive are quite astounding and astonishing. They are incomplete, as everything is.
Robert Shapiro is professor of East European Studies at City University, New York.
But if we look at the accumulation of the details, we get a sense of wonder of how people lived in a time of catastrophe. We have a slight echo of that in the documents recorded on answering machines and voicemail accounts after 9/11, 2001. Like a man or a woman on a desert island who has a bottle, puts a message in the bottle, seals it as best he or she can, tosses it into the ocean and hopes years from now someone will get it and they will know, they will respond somehow.
The code name for the project was Oinek Shabbos, the Joy of the Sabbath, or OS for short. The plan was to record every detail of life through diaries, poems, reports, sketches, leaflets, tram tickets, newspapers and even sweet wrappers. It was chronicle and warning. The Jewish Historical Institute, stone floors, grey paint.
So let's go first after the exhibition.
Pavel Spivak is the director, head of a team that's still working with the OS archive even now. Only a tiny part has been translated into English. The originals are kept here, in metal strong rooms in the cellar. Rows of narrow drawers pull out to reveal the documents.
It was a real place.
Part of the ghetto which survived the war. Now it is called Bankowy Square. And in this place, it is very important, the people from Oinek Shabbos, they were working just in this building.
Here is the broken floor.
Here on the opposite side was the Great Synagogue. It was blown up after the uprising in ghetto in 43, and fire came here and destroyed the floor here.
June 1941. Jewish children are now learning about Warsaw from pictures. The walls prevent them from seeing the original.
Here is the picture of Ringelblum. Interesting that he was a historian who graduated from Warsaw University. And he was also a social activist in the party called Poalition. Very left-wing, Marxist, Zionist group. Thanks to his political and social activity, he was able to find enough people whom he was able to trust. It was very important to trust the people.
Many new truths have emerged for us, some of them quite painful. Deep shocks that have undermined our faith in humanity and our belief in truths which have been the credo for generations.
Because this building was also the building of the social services for the ghetto. They were using this place also because they were able to hide the documents into the, how to say, normal work of the social services.
Each day differed from its predecessor. It was like a motion picture in which a series of still shots are run together in a rapid sequence. It's been important to seize each day's development while it was still fresh and pulsing, because each day was like a decade in ordinary times.
From the very beginning, he knew that the situation of the Jews is absolutely unique without comparison, and it is the most difficult time of the life of his nation. It was absolutely obvious for him. Perhaps, of course, in the beginning of the 40 and 41, they were not able to predict how it will end.
The General Staff has issued the following communique. Number one, at 6:15 p.m. On the 1st of September 1939, at dawn, the Germans crossed into our territory.
It wasn't only air raids, there were shells and heavy artillery. The very strong air raid shelter under our wing was completely buried under six floors.
came out of a clear sky. The German Air Force, outnumbering the Poles by many...
German planes dropped 600 tons of bombs on Warsaw. More Polish civilians were killed in that month, September, than have died in the entire eight-year war in 21st century Iraq.
No hope and no protection from the terror that rained down from the sky.
To understand what happened, you've got to know what was here before. Warsaw, they'd called it the Paris of the East, a great European metropolis full of nations and peoples and languages. Tourists marvelled at the Art Deco skyscraper, loved the nightclubs. The songs of the Electro Sirena record company filled dance halls far beyond Poland. This is I Hardly Know You, sung by Mieczysław Fog. It was a hit that summer. Of the million people in Warsaw, one in three was Jewish, making this the capital of the greatest concentration of Jewish humanity in Europe. It was a rich, complex community, loud with debate. Side by side, you'd find religious tradition and reform, ancient libraries and firebrand tracts. There were political parties of all colours, left, right, Zionist, communist. There were people who upped sticks for America or Palestine, and people who'd never say goodbye to Warsaw. Which language should we speak, Yiddish or Polish? Which language, in which script? What's best for our children? What should we believe? Who are we?
Today, on Saturday, October the 12th, it was dreadful. Over the megaphone, the division of the city into three parts was announced. German, Polish and Jewish.
From the western side along Okopowa Street to the even side of Glinana Street. Next along the walls of the Jewish cemetery to the corner of Pavia Street.
By the end of October, everyone, with the exception of the Germans, must move house without taking their furniture.
Number 95 in Jelena Street lies outside the boundary, while the rest of the houses in Jelena Street are in the Jewish district.
The ghetto was closing around us.
Janina Dawidowicz is one of the very few living witnesses to our story. She was 9 years old when she arrived in Warsaw with her parents.
The walls around the ghetto were built piecemeal, not one continuous wall.
There's despair in our tenement. The owner of the house has been living for 37 years in the same flat, which she's now supposed to leave without taking her belongings. A ghetto is slowly being created.
The whole length of Wolnoś Street is Aryan. In Sosnowa Street, the walls exclude numbers 7 and 10A, and in Wielka Street, numbers 8 and 9 from the Jewish district.
They were called sort of epidemic walls, walls against epidemics of typhus. But eventually we realized they were going to close completely, and all the bits were joined together.
In Mirowska Street, numbers 1, 2, 4, 6, 7 and 8 belonged to the Aryan district.
And that was it. People were crying on the street.
On the corner of Chłodna and Żelazna Streets, a Jewish family says its farewells to a Polish one. They kiss, shake hands, invite one another to come and visit us next week.
We should also add that the block of houses lying between Krzybowska, one house, Ciepła and Krochmalna Streets have been included in the Aryan district.
My mother and I had to sleep on the floor under the table, which was the only place for us, for quite a long time.
Refugees kept arriving from all over Poland, squeezed into bits of rooms and stairwells, swelling the population by half. Each one brought snatched belongings and a unique story of loss. They're the stories of people who leave no diary, no trace on the earth. Ringelblum worked constantly to write down these stories from all across the country.
The young couple in the flats, the people who took us in, they owned an electrical lamp shop. One day the Germans came in, broke all the lamps, threw the furniture through the big plate glass window onto the street, just broke, shattered everything. So that was their main support gone.
December the 10th, 1940. A man came along with a pass. The watchman on Grzybowska Street took him into the guard room, tortured him for 2 hours, forcing him to drink urine, have sexual relations with a Gentile woman. They beat him over the head and then cleaned the wounds with a broom. The next day, they treated him humanely, saying that Jews are people too.
Ringelblum's archive grew with each detail. He brought in trusted friends to commission, interview, and log each story. A pool of typists copied each document in triplicate, storing each copy separately. Almost no one knew the scale or hiding place of the entire OS. Now we'd call that an information firewall.
The names Zyuta, Asya, Eli, Vanya, Sioma, do they tell you anything? Nothing. People, not needed. There were thousands like them. Theirs were the lives I knew.
Pictures survive of strange and interesting things. Some of the pictures are words, they're songs. Władysław Szlengel's poem, Telephone, it's not imaginary. There were a small number of telephones in the Warsaw Ghetto, but you had to have somebody to call. Who would take the call? Who would respond? And Szlengel, in his poem, calls the only number he knows where they won't hang up.
I, in the year 39, went a quite different way. Our paths moved apart after, the friendships of old, dead and gone. So now, if you please, I have no one to call on the telephone. Yet, I pick up the receiver, the cord dangles slowly and sadly. I dial the well-known number, and am answered by...
At the third stroke, it will be 8:56 and 20 seconds.
Chat with me for a moment, for I have tears in my throat. Say something, dear time lady. It is now 10:54. With your calm voice were how often events of my life interwoven. You do remember, time lady. It is now 10:57. Let's reminisce, if you don't mind. The year 1939. I'd just left the theatre behind, returning home on the Zero from the pictures, a feature with Norma Shearer, the newsboy on the street corner who hawked the Red Courier at night.
At the third stroke,
did you say something, time lady? It is 11 now. Already the autumn night splutters and over the walls clouds fly. We chat and we dream together, my nice time lady and I. And so farewell, dear and distant. Some hearts forever stay true. It's 5 to midnight, you're saying. You're right. Good night then to you.
Szlengel gave this poem and others to Ringelblum for safekeeping. It takes a leap of imagination for us, but in 1940-41, the archive shows how most people thought they'd come out of the ghetto alive.
As soon as the war finished, you know, the day after tomorrow, everything was just snap back, like by magic. My mother, my grandmother were talking about, you know, we need new curtains in the living room. Nobody believed that this was going to go on. So, in this spirit, this is how we lived.
December the 10th, 1940. Yesterday, a German soldier sprang out of a passing car and hit a boy on the head with an iron bar. The boy died. There was a massacre on Grzybowska Street. The estimate is 100 wounded, one boy killed. Juvenile delinquents ride around the town, beating innocent Jewish passers-by with their whips.
Nathan Zelikover, memoirs. Everyone was very careful. Before you left home, you'd ask the question, how are things out there today? And you try to keep a watchful eye out for danger on a crowded street. People walking along exchanging words of warning which could suddenly change the whole direction of movement in the street. One word of danger, one gesture, squeezed a crowd of several thousand people into gateways, leaving a street empty, suddenly stripped bare.
You had to push just to get along the few main streets like Nowolipki. People packed together in constant, restless movement. A young woman in her best dress and high heels, a beggar wearing a sack, a wheelbarrow of books for sale. The archive freezes thousands of moments.
Geshia Street. Scraps of things and people. What a miserable sight of hand-embroidered and hand-knit curtains. Washed-out children's underwear, their last towel. Often people unpick the lining from their coats and sell it for a quarter of a loaf of bread. And sometimes you see in the street people dressed a la Gandhi, in only a sheet of material and a bare back. Apparently things belonging to the living fetch a higher price.
Rachel Auerbach, a journalist in the Oynak Shabbos. The OS team was hundreds strong by now. Many scorn the Judenrat, the council in charge of food rations, healthcare, welfare, the post office. In charge, of course, was a fiction.
Sanitary and order regulations for the Jewish district. Department of Health, rubbish and other domestic waste should not be thrown into the courtyards and streets. It is forbidden to beat clothes, carpets and bedclothes in windows and on balconies.
There was typhus, typhoid fever, tuberculosis. One of my cousins had a baby. The baby stopped thriving. He shrunk. His arms and legs bent and sort of went into a spasm. And he died pretty quickly.
What does the war mean? Well, there are two kinds of war. The war against hunger and the war with bullets. The hunger war is worse because then everybody suffers. A bullet will kill you quickly.
Everyone wrote. Journalists and writers, of course, but also teachers, public men, young people, even children. Most of them kept diaries where the tragic events of the day were reflected through the prism of personal experience. We may succeed in making sure that not a single fact about Jewish life at this time and place will be kept from the world.
What we see in the street. Yaffa Bergman, age 14, January 16th, 1942. A very nasty cold day. I go out to the street. The street looks sad. The stores are small and very poor. In the middle of the street, rickshaws are moving and a tram all marked with the Star of David. From all sides, I hear voices crying out for bread. Here is a poor woman, her clothes torn and tattered, swollen from starvation. She lies in the street like a corpse. I can't look at her. These are the scenes I see in the street every day.
Of course there was smuggling. The ghetto lived from food that was smuggled through. Children were very good smugglers because they were very small. They could squeeze through little openings between the walls.
The little smuggler, past walls, past guards, through holes, ruins, wires and fences. Impudent, hungry, obstinate. 100 times I risk my life. I risk my childish neck.
On Egg Shabbat questionnaire, what for the ghetto is a blessing, is, in the broader national viewpoint, a curse. What sort of generation will evolve from these smugglers and contraband dealers, these reckless youths?
Just across the road from the ghetto is the Jewish cemetery of Warsaw. We're just on the edge of it. There are silver birch trees and you see skyscrapers, banks, silver towers made of mirror rising up. But here on this side of the wall, inside the cemetery, it's very calm and peaceful. You can hardly hear a sound of traffic.
Heard marvellous stories of the smuggling that goes on via the Jewish graveyard. In one night, they transported 26 cows by that route. The smugglers have code numbers that they shout across.
Many of the smugglers, of course, were children who tunnelled their way under the wall, and a poem is up here, it survived, attributed to a woman called Henrika Lazarevert. The little smuggler, if fate will turn against me in that game of life and bread, only one worry besets me, lying in agony, so nearly dead. Who'll care for you tomorrow? Who'll bring you, dear mum, a slice of bread?
At the ghetto wall, there were gendarmerie posts, Polish police, and Jewish police. Once there was a veritable slaughter. There were tens of Jewish children between 5 and 6 years old, whom the German killers shot in great numbers near the passages and at the walls. And despite that, when the street was still slippery with the blood that had been spilled, other smugglers already set out. Without paying attention to the victims, the smuggling never stopped for a moment. March 18, 1941. In a secret flat, they study the holy books. The place is disguised. The door is opened only to those who are trusted and who know the password, an agreed way of knocking. There sits a big group of yeshiva pupils and others. They learn, they study. One reads a collection of Haggadah, another says Psalms, a third's going through the Talmud.
This year, Hanukkah was celebrated everywhere with great enthusiasm. Hundreds of parties and children's plays were held all over Warsaw. In the yards, prominent people from the community were honored by lighting the first candle. Hanukkah candles were seen glowing from every window.
Hillel Zeitlin, 1941. Unfortunately, it is a tragic truth that religious life has sharply declined in the ghetto. The Sabbath has disappeared. In a building such as mine, for instance, where there are 220 families, there are scarcely two, three families who observe the Sabbath.
There are people who lose all faith. There are people who didn't have faith to begin with. There are people who have faith in the Soviet Union and the red flag. There are people who have faith in drink. There are people who have faith in nothing. And there are people who have faith. God knows what he's doing.
Even now, people made tremendous efforts to get ready for peace and the rebuilding of life. Doctors, engineers and teachers would be essential to post-war Europe. 10,000 children enrolled at secret schools.
Textbook for children, Agudat Yisrael Karen Hatorah.
Lessons were forbidden. Catholic children, on the other side of the wall, the Poles, were allowed schools but only primary schools, because slaves have no need for further education.
One, don't postpone learning for later, in case later you might not be able to.
But ordinary school was allowed. Children in the ghetto had no future. There was death penalty for teacher, parents and children if they were caught organizing or having lessons of any kind. Well, all of us had lessons.
Three, with whom people are content, the one on high is also content.
We had one teacher who would teach us everything according to our age. And in that way, we learned quite a lot. I learned algebra, which I hated.
Five, say little and do much.
Organist is the name popularly given to a man who's heavily bribed. Musical is the name for the man who takes a bribe from time to time.
Money is the only thing. If you don't have money, you can kiss your ass goodbye, because money is the only thing.
People who've got assets might have leisure time. They might go to one of the restaurants or the nightclubs or the cabarets that existed in the Warsaw Ghetto. People sing and they dance a little and they're drinking some kind of alcohol.
A night spot's been opened in the cellar of the Hotel Britannia at 18 Novolipia Street. It's open until 7 in the morning, apparently for loose purposes. Revelry unconfined there. A kilo of wine costs 25 zlotys there.
If you don't have money, you are out of luck, because money in this place is the only thing. You say you lack money, you don't have any. Now I have just the plan for you. You find yourself a hole and crawl in there, because money is the only thing.
You could see people, sometimes better dressed than us, begging. Very shyly, many of them, because they were just beginning. And then they would sit down, they couldn't stand anymore. And then they would swell enormously. And then the swelling would get infected and they would get huge blisters, which became infected. Really, all that was left was just skin and bones. Then they died, lying on the pavement, stripped of the clothes that they had, covered in newspaper with a couple of bricks to hold the newspaper down, and you learn to step over them.
It's been a hot and humid day in Warsaw. The storm's finally broken, the rainstorm coming down. We're at the Feminist Cinema. It's one of the few buildings in this part of Warsaw to have survived the war, and it's standing as it was before. There's people coming in, it's relaxed, folding up their umbrellas from the rain, coming in to see Hollywood Standard Fair. If we take this building back 70 years, it was the Femina Theatre, and it was the hub of entertainment in the Warsaw Ghetto.
There was a symphony orchestra. There were several orchestras. We couldn't afford to go and listen. Once, as a great sort of present, my father took me to see Kalman's Czardasz Princess, and I already knew all the arias in Polish, and to the great annoyance of the man who was sitting in the chair in front of me, I was sort of whispering all the names into his ear. He's absolutely furious. I have been in the theater before, but only for the children's theater in Kalisz. But this was a grown-up performance.
Odróżnić umiem już miłostkę od miłości. Z nich jest wiele wspólnych cech. Są chwile.
Names famous across Europe performed in the theatres and cafes. There was the King of the Foxtrot, Arthur Gold and his orchestra. Singers like Diana Blumenfeld and Vera Gran, accompanied by the concert pianist Vladislav Spielmann.
The favourite singer, Vera Gran, daintily steps onto a small stage. Rather plump, with hair tied back girlishly and floating in a crinoline with a very low neckline, sings about unhappy love, about trees rhythmically sighing to the rhythm of a waltz, about golden bananas on far-off islands. When people go to the cafe, it is that kind of song they want, to shut their eyes and imagine they are in the Adria or Paradise restaurant, and you no longer have to be sad for you to begin to live again.
The ominous news from Jewish communities outside Warsaw grew ever more dreadful. The Oinek Shabbos group recorded all it heard and used the Polish underground network to get reports to London and New York to alert the world.
The process of physical destruction of Polish Jewry has already begun. Not a day goes by that the Nazis do not conduct a slaughter. The rumours that reach us from the provincial towns are worse than the tidings of Job.
Oinek Shabbos had tiny resources. Should they fund an escape route for the most talented, the cream of their generation? So should children starve to death to spare a cellist? Should each zloty buy guns to try to kill a few Germans? Who could be saved? And if everyone was going to die, what was the point in collecting pieces of paper?
The Jews did not believe they were lost. At the very heart of their temple of meditation was God, who had brought them through the Red Sea and would pull down the walls of the ghetto. Their hearts were squeezed with unbelievable terror, but they left themselves a rational way out. You could get rid of thousands, or several thousands in that way, or even, let's say, several tens of thousands, but not half a million strong ghetto.
The symphony orchestra began rehearsing Beethoven's Ninth, with its Ode to Joy especially translated into Hebrew. There were no French horns, oboes, or bassoons to be found in the ghetto, so the orchestra used saxophones. There was not enough paper for scores either, so they played by ear. In April 1942, the orchestra was suspended by the Germans for playing Aryan music, but they continued to rehearse.
We reached the conclusion that the Germans took very little interest in what the Jews were doing amongst themselves. One said everything that came to mind at every meeting of a house committee. In conditions of such freedom among the slaves of the ghetto, it was not surprising that the work of Oneg Shabbat should develop successfully.
Time has been unleashed. Time is passing by without us. We wait for the moment that will come, we know not when. Eternity was coming closer to us for yet another reason. It was brought closer by the fact that every day we come up against categories of existence and non-existence.
You know, there was a very famous writer, Janusz Korczak, who was a doctor before the war, who had orphanages for boys and girls in Warsaw and wrote beautiful children's books. He was a very good psychologist. The children had their own government in their orphanages. They ran themselves. They had their own rules. The Germans offered him freedom, and he said no. He begged for his children. There were quite a lot of shows put on, always for charitable aims, and the money went to keep up the orphanages. The last one that I saw was the best of all. It was taking part in one of the very big refugee centers in which hundreds of people lived. And they organized a really superb show. Only the children performed. And at the very end, all the children came up on stage and sang a very pretty song, which was more or less, goodbye to you, goodbye. We're inviting you to the next performance. We are now going to have our afternoon tea. Goodbye to you, goodbye to you, goodbye to you.
June 26th, 1942. Friday, June the 26th, has been a great day for Oneg Shabbat. This morning, the English radio broadcast about the fate of Polish Jewry. They told about everything we know so well. For long months, we've been suffering because the world was deaf and dumb to our unparalleled tragedy. I do not know who of our group will survive, but one thing is clear to all. Our toils and tribulations, our devotion and constant terror have not been in vain.
July 22nd, 1942. I haven't the strength to hold a pen in my hand. I'm broken, shattered. A whole community of 400,000 people condemned to exile.
23rd July, Thursday. Cool. Rain on and off all day. 7,200 people deported.
People packed their bags, believing, hoping that the trains were taking them east to work camps, where life must be better. Failure to report was punishable by death, and there were promises of marmalade or jam for those reporting to the railway yard at the Umschlagplatz. In Janina's flat, a young woman called Rachel dressed eagerly in the skirt and blouse she'd been saving for her wedding.
Rachel went. She took her trousseau with her.
24th July, Friday. Cool, cloudy, strong wind. 7,400 people deported.
A new series of stories come to us. Now we know everything. We know how they squeeze people into the cattle rail cars, what is spoken and thought in the cellars of the Umschlagplatz, how SS men lured the people hidden there out with the threats of using gases. We know how they killed them, how they took away their shoes and coats. We know the last wishes of our loved ones. We know all that.
25th July, Saturday. Sun, a little warmer. 7,350 people deported.
Eventually, our landlord and landlady also went. They took all their kitchen stuff with them, you know, pots and pans, large bundles tied up in a sheet, one in front, one at the back. They could hardly walk, but they went.
We know how they left with no coats, with the spectre of being suffocated by gas.
27th July, Monday. Warm. 6,320 people deported.
The order service promised personal safety and the safety of family members, even uncles, in-laws, distant relatives.
28th July. Tuesday. Cold. Frequent rain. 5,020 people deported.
Later, they separated less healthy workers from those who were stronger. All the time they lied to us, announcing that the action was nearly over, in order to prevent revolt.
31st July, Friday. Cloudy and cold. Rain, clearing, warmer. 6,756 people deported.
Most of the deportees seem resigned to their fate. When my end comes, what will happen to the diary?
The father of the twins who were living above us threw himself out of the window when he came home and didn't find the children.
4th September, Friday. Hot and close. Heavy evening storm. 1,669 people deported.
The treasury of the Reich is growing. The Jewish people are dying. Everything is dying.
History is expanding. The small, narrow, and unimportant history of our days.
And then there was only my grandparents and my father, mother, and me. The whole block of flats was empty.
In the glow of an incomparable golden Polish autumn, a layer of snow shines and glitters. This snow is nothing other than feathers and down from Jewish eiderdowns, left behind together with all their goods, the streets full of bits of barbed wire. Above all, a complete absence of people. A depopulation, unknown even in the ages of the great plagues. That is the picture of the Jewish district in Warsaw in September 1942.
24th September, action in the Warsaw ghetto ceases. During 46 days, 253,742 Jews deported.
The majority could not imagine that you were going straight into a gas chamber.
An open door, an empty room, a red eiderdown flapping from a window. Most of the Oyneg Shabbos group died at Treblinka, but at the height of the deportations, Ringelblum had activated his emergency plan. On a hot August night, the technical director of the Oyneg Shabbos, Israel Lichtenstein, and two teenaged helpers packed several thousand documents into 10 tin boxes, bound them with cord and buried them at 68 Nowolipki Street. With the German snatch squads just a few doors away, the three threw in last-minute notes.
Yesterday we sat up until late in the night, since we were not certain whether we would live until today. Now I am writing, and in the street there is terrible shooting. I am proud of one thing, that in these days of the greatest misfortune, I was one of those who buried the treasure.
Nachum Gezevich.
I don't ask for any thanks, for any memorial, for any praise. I only wish to be remembered. I wish my wife to be remembered, Gela Seckstein. I wish my little daughter to be remembered. Marguerite is 20 months old today.
And so we know who they were. We know Lichtenstein, his wife, the artist Gela Seckstein, and can see 300 paintings she stored. We know that their toddler, Margalita, could already chatter in Polish and Yiddish before she died.
Everybody from my apartment building is gone. An abandoned briefcase, hissing of boiling water from somewhere, a half-empty glass. Nobody is around. I run away from my flat.
We roamed through those flats, looking at everything that was left behind.
Janina's grandparents, aunt, cousins were all gone. Her parents had a temporary reprieve, as her father had worked for the police. Now Janina was one of the few children left in the almost empty ghetto.
There were treasures to us, how other people lived, what they had. We, the girls, would make a pile of all the stuff in the middle of the room, and the boys pissed on it. And then we would move on to the next flat and do the same, so that nobody would have any joy out of these things. Once or twice I brought things home and my mother just threw them out of the window and cried. My mother knew that her parents had been taken and were not coming back.
Ringelblum still searched for writers to document what was now clearly the last days of European Jewry.
Eliza Melamed. In the ghetto there was silence. In the daytime walking around was forbidden, and after dark patrols went out and shot at anyone they saw. For the whole time, the threat of a new Axion hung over the ghetto, our hearts turned to stone. About 100 people lived together in 3 rooms, and there was no possibility of feeding them all. Our hearts broke with despair. We all lay on the floor, which was covered with mattresses, and sang night after night, and the autumn wind howled outside the windows, and the far-off whistles of trains filled us with fear.
The Oinig Shabbos group gathered scraps of notebooks thrown from trains and detailed testimony from the few people who'd got away and slipped back into Warsaw. Using the Polish underground, it succeeded in getting reports to London and New York.
A man came. He escaped from Treblinka. He went from house to house in the courtyard, would gather people around and tell people exactly what was happening. And people didn't believe.
Starting in the first days of December 1942, I lived in a block belonging to the factory of artificial honey and sweets. My neighbor was a young man who on September 13 had escaped from Treblinka. I got an allocation of candles so that I could work at night. Everything that SKP had been through during his 18-day stay at the death camp.
It was clear that the few thousand people left in the ghetto should count life in weeks rather than months. Using underground connections, people smuggled in what weapons they could.
The cave epoch returns, oil lamps, village-type wells. The long night has begun. People are going back under the ground to escape from animals.
There were holes punched in the walls between houses so that you could go from one house to another without coming out onto the street. You either went through the cellars or through the, sometimes on the staircase, there was a whole bricks taken out so that you could go from one house to another.
Do not die without a fight. Defend yourself. Take an axe, a crowbar, a knife, barricade your house. Let them take you by assault.
Resistance. Shots are fired. The Jews have grenades. The Jews have weapons. At Niska Street, a house is set ablaze. At Schulz's, grenades were hurled. Several SS men have been killed. No longer is the ghetto a deep forest with the game being exterminated. It becomes a front line.
Those who remained fought the battle of their lives. For a month in the spring of 1943, they fought back at the Germans from alleyways, sewers and windows.
The SS dare not enter the cellars. On a street intersection lies a spread body of the dead SS man. His whip lies in the gutter.
The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. It's another story, far beyond this programme. At the end, the ghetto was obliterated, dynamited, and burned to ashes with flamethrowers. Some Oinig Shabbos members hung on to the end. Vladislav Schlengel recited his poems in hiding places and in rubble until they shot him.
I'm looking through and sorting the poems that were written to those who are no more. These poems I used to read to the warm, living people when I was full of faith in our survival, in an end to all that, in a tomorrow, in vengeance, in joy, in rebuilding. Do read it. This is our history. This is what I read to the dead.
March the 1st, 1944. Jews showed the world that they could fight with weapons and they knew how to die with honour in the battle against the archenemy of the Jewish people and humanity. The outpouring of cultural and social activity continued as long as the Jewish collective remained alive. We alarmed the world with detailed information about the greatest crime in history, and we are continuing our cultural activity.
This letter was Ringelblum's last. He was caught and shot with his wife and son in March 1944.
I never heard any news about my mother. Something happened to her in the few streets that she had to cross. She never arrived.
In the last terrible months of the ghetto, Janina's parents managed to smuggle her out to the Aryan side. One dismal morning, her mother dressed her in layers of clothes. Her father escorted her to the gates and his contacts who would hide her. They hoped to follow on later.
Several months after the end of the war, when I was back in Kalisz, my hometown, I was going up to a library and on the staircase, I crossed a man who was coming down. He stopped me. He asked whether I was Janina Dawidowicz. I was with your father in Majdanek. We wanted to take your father with us, but he was too ill and too weak, and he asked to be left. He said my father recited some of my poems and asked anyone who was leaving to go to Kalisz. And that's all he said. I sat down on the stairs, and I really don't remember anything else. I never heard any more.
One broiling afternoon, we went into what was left of Warsaw's ghetto. there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of bodies still buried in those ruins. To the eye, there was only a sea of ashes and bricks. To the ear, a dead silence. The silence of a city become a sanctuary.
Three people from the Oynag Shabbos group survived the war. The journalist Rachel Auerbach, Bluma Wasser, she was one of the OS typists, and her husband Hirsch, who had jumped from a train to Treblinka. In 1946, they led a team, including a cameraman, dug under the rubble and carried out 10 flat, grimy metal boxes bound with cord. There it was, the first set of archives.
Die historische Kommission beim Zentralkomitee hat noch lange gesichernischen Ausbegum den Ringelblumarchiv.
On film, we see rows of anxious, smiling men and women peeling apart damp documents to be sorted, identified and preserved. Then in 1950, workmen building a housing estate in what was now communist Warsaw dug up 2 milk churns, the second set of archives. Taken in all, around 35,000 documents and artefacts, fragments of testimony.
I call Karch, Zelma Karch, who may be living in London. I call her on behalf of her 16-year-old cousin, Hela Bergman, born in Poland.
All across Europe were people alone, single survivors of what had been families.
I found a tiny little plastic ace of spades, green, which was my father's good luck when he played poker.
Janina became a writer and lives in London now. You might brush against her on the street and never know her story.
I kept it for years in my purse. Many years later, I lost that talisman.
Through the jungle of stone walls, our steps called out to each other like melancholy birds, yet together with dust and wind, I will bring home in the folds of my dress your scent, which unknowingly hit my heart between sweat and benzene, perfumes and silk, like the idea of spring and winter.
In Warsaw, the third cache of archive, the biggest, has never been found. In 2003, a team dug down into the Chinese Embassy garden on what was Novolipki Street. They found no more boxes, just the burned scraps of a diary. The rest of the Oynag Shabbos documents may still be under Warsaw. Reading our voices from the ghetto were Elliot Levy, Adi Lehrer, Anton Lesser, David Schneider, Isaac Berman and the Radio Drama Company. Our singers were Marina Goodman and Azzy Schwartz. The clarinetist was Laura Flax. The programme was produced by Mark Berman and Monica Whitlock.